Thank you from me, and thank you for all the people that you've been of such enormous help to through the years and are continuing to do so. You're a real gift. So having been introduced as a master storyteller, I feel I probably should tell you a story. The one that occurs to me is a Sufi story. It's about the god Khidr. Khidr came to earth because he wanted to give to mankind that secret word by which all might be accomplished. And so as he was on his he arrived on earth, and who should he run into but the three wisest men of the land of fools. And that's what the Sufis call us. We're the land of fools because of how we live our lives. If you don't know what I mean, see me after my talk. And they said, what are you doing here and who are you? And he says, I'm Khidr. I'm here to give mankind the word by which all may be accomplished. And they said, well, you're fortunate indeed. It says, you're fortunate indeed because we are the three wisest men of the land of fools. You give us the word. And so he told them the word. The first one says, well, that can't be the word. I've heard it before. And the second one said, well, that can't be the word because you could write that word. Certainly the word by which all can be accomplished would be incapable of being written. And the third one said, that can't be the word, because certainly the word by which all could be accomplished could be spoken only by folks as wise as us. That word could be uttered by anyone. And before they had a chance to continue with their conversation, a deputation of citizens from the city came out to seek their help, and they bid adieu to the god. And Khidr, they say, was very disappointed and went back to heaven and says, okay, what is that word by which all can be accomplished? I found myself beginning that journey in the 1960s, where I studied Western medicine, and I noticed that there were two things that stood out to me. One was the, I would say, unfriendly way that patients were often treated by the medical profession. Our focus was on disease. The patient was just the vehicle that brought the disease to us, and we would treat the disease. Of course, we became specialists. And you know, a specialist is someone who studies one particular field. You, as a specialist, you learn more and more about less and less, you know, the heart or the kidney or those. So ultimately, you know absolutely everything about absolutely nothing. The second thing I realized is that the relationship that I had with my patients had a phenomenal effect upon how quickly they got well. But no one in medicine was interested in that. But by scouring the books and by studying different things, I found out that there were people who were interested in that. So I studied the Eastern religions. I studied hypnosis. I studied Christian Science, studied autogenic training. And I found that there were all these other approaches that seemed to give people the power to affect their physiology. As a physician, I thought it was my duty to discover what healing was, because that's clearly what I'm there to help people do. You know, we have that expression in medicine, the surgery was a success, but the patient died. You know, I did a great job. Doggone patient didn't pull through. So what was healing? And in time, I began to realize that what healing is becoming more whole. That when the first life form appeared on Earth, let's imagine that it's a single cell. That cell had a membrane. And in order to be alive, that membrane had to be intact, so that the cell could establish an internal balance, the right number of potassium ions and sodium ions and foods, and had to get rid of its waste products. If that balance is thrown off, then the cell becomes ill in some way, and if that illness proceeds, then that cell can die. If the membrane of the cell therefore becomes dysfunctional, let's say there's a hole in the membrane, then the cell has to close that hole. It has to remain a total, complete organism. In other words, it has to have an identity. And number two, it has to establish an internal balance. And this is what life requires. But that's what healing requires too. Because if the balance is thrown off, then we must reestablish the integrity and we must reestablish the balance. Life is about that. Healing is about that. And as we talk about multicellular animals, and as we talk about animals that live in families and communities, the notion of wholeness takes on other meanings, other definitions. Because now we're talking about the wholeness of the mother and the child, the wholeness of the family, the wholeness of the beehive. And so healing is managing to create wholeness. And there's an individual, there's a level of wholeness of an individual cell of my body. There's a wholeness of an organ of the body. There's a wholeness of the organ system of the body. There's a wholeness of the body as a whole. But me, I'm not just a body. I have a mind. I have emotions. I have a sense of spirituality. I have my behaviors. I have my relationships with other people. When I bring wholeness to all those levels, then I am more whole and more healed. So people often think of healing somehow as getting the pain to go away. Well, an aspirin may get the pain to go away. It'll treat the source. And that's what I found we were doing mostly in Western medicine. We are treating the symptoms rather than the source of whatever the illness is. And so if a person comes in and let's say they're vomiting blood from the mouth, well, we could say, okay, let's see if we can stuff some bandages in their mouth to stop the bleeding. That's not a good idea. Instead, we look and we say, oh, it's coming from the stomach. We take an x-ray. We say, ah, there's an ulcer. Okay, so let's get in there and cut that ulcer out. Well, wait a minute. Why is there an ulcer? Well, the ulcer is in there. You take a history of the person and you find out the ulcer is just a symptom. Because a person's been drinking a fifth of gin and eating about 30 aspirin a day. That's much closer to the source. But is that the source? No, maybe that. Why are you doing that? Well, it turns out the person's suffering from some deep guilt. And that guilt is causing them to feel very bad. And so they drink and that takes care of the bad feelings. But then they have hangovers and then they take the aspirin. So the ulcer is a symptom, but the behavior is a symptom too. A symptom of an imbalance at the mental, emotional, spiritual, and relationship level. So when I talk about healing, I'm looking at all those different levels. So I felt that my job was to help to awaken my chosen profession. I love the profession of medicine. I love the notion of helping people, and I have enormous respect for those physicians of old, the ones who, if they developed a new drug, would inject themselves first before they would subject the patient to it. Because the first rule of medicine, primum non nocere, first do no harm. And I identified with those people who would go out in the middle of a blizzard to see a child who had a fever. I found the medicine that I had entered was nothing like the medicine I thought I was going into. So some colleagues of mine and myself, we began to develop that concept of holistic medicine. And my interest was the field of mind-body medicine. How do the mind and the body interrelate in terms of healing? So it has something to do as well with emotions and with behaviors and with relationships. Back in the 18th century, there was Louis Pasteur. And Louis Pasteur, of course, really is the father of the germ theory of disease. Now, disease, he said, is caused by these little these little entities that will come and attack you. And what we need to do for healing is to fight those germs, and then we'll be healthy. And that is really what our allopathic system of medicine has been based upon. Has been based upon the notion that the cause of our problems is out there, and so we develop poisons and we develop surgical procedures and so forth, which of course have done an absolutely marvelous job because we've brought much of that external world under control. There was someone else at this same time, Claude Bernard, and he had a different concept. His was called homeostasis, and that had to do with the maintenance of a certain balance within, and that the host, that's me and you, we had a responsibility to maintain that balance, and when that balance goes off, then the body becomes susceptible to those illnesses that are around us all the time. So there was really a struggle between these two physicians, and Pasteur won out. People didn't talk much about Bernard's work for quite a while. However, it's said that on his deathbed, Pasteur said, "In looking back, I think Bernard was right." And of course, they were both right, except that our style of medicine had dropped the notion of teaching people. As a physician, you didn't see yourself as being responsible for informing people in detail how to eat, how to exercise, how to manage their relationships, or how to manage stress. Well, the word stress wasn't even known in our profession at that time. So this became my goal, is to discover how to interact with people in such a way as to give them information that they can use so as to bring their systems into balance. It's kind of like taking your car to the mechanic and getting a checkout and getting everything in really good shape before you go on a long trip across the desert. What can be done using these kinds of approaches to enhancing the healing response? Thinking back to what the healing response is. Of course, what everyone would like to do is to empower the immune system to eliminate the cancer cells. Can that be done? Many people believe that it can be done. Many studies indicate that, indeed, it may be possible, at least in some cases, to do that. There are also indications that in some cases, one's not able to eliminate the disease. Okay, what then? Well, perhaps we can empower that immune system to slow its progression, so as to maintain our lives and a quality of life for a longer period of time. And what about those cases in which it's not really possible to slow down the progression of the disease itself? Well, there are two things. There's a disease and the illness, and they're not the same thing. There can be two people with the same disease where one is much more ill than the other. That one person has surrendered in some way. One person has slipped into depression. A person feels helpless. They stop taking care of themselves. They stop doing the things that they can do that can really empower them to live a rich and very, very productive life. I know that most people in our society, you know, we're very, very queasy about death, so we hide dead people. Even in the hospital, you sneak them down the back hallways. We don't want to believe that this exists. But from in my experience, it does exist. And sooner or later, each of us is going to have to cross that particular pathway. We're going to have to cross over and discover what all of that's about. Most of us don't have control over when that happens. And it makes sense to think about it beforehand and to really think about the meaning of that concept of life and of death, rather than feeling, okay, this is something I have to run away from the thoughts of. Often what we do to run away from things creates tension and anxiety inside, which then enables, allows the body to become even more susceptible to illness, or perhaps even more susceptible to cancer itself. And my experience of having been with many, many, many people who have made that transition from life into death, there are some very, very conscious ways of passing through that particular doorway. And I think it's a good idea for all of us, and I mean starting when you're probably when you're a teenager, to start deciding how do you want to go across that threshold, because you never know when it's going to happen. It's like the Buddhists say, if you die before you die, then when you die, you don't die, because you've dealt with that already in some way. So the healing response then is being able to guide our mind, body, emotions, spirit, and behavior to be more whole. That is to say that we're all composed of subsystems, to have all the systems within our body, each functioning as well as possible, but then to have all of them functioning really well together. So sometimes it's a really good idea to relax. Sometimes it's a good idea to turn off that constant chatter that's in your mind. So relax totally and stop thinking, and then raise your hand and I'll continue. No? Not so easy to do, because we've been trained by our environment to think constantly, to worry, to be tense, and to be uptight about things. So one of the very important pieces of enhancing the healing response is to lower the level of stress within. Stress is defined as the nonspecific reaction to any demand that's been made upon you. So let's say I get a phone call just before I'm about to speak to you, and it says, your son says, oh, Dad, I'm really, really sorry I smashed up the new car. And immediately my mind thinks of all the problems that are now going to take place. Oh, and I'm in jail. But you know, I need to speak to you. This didn't really happen, by the way, but if it did, I need to speak to you, and it doesn't do me any good to be thinking about that situation over there. Now, you can create your own situations in life of how you often are not able to really be where you want to be and do what you want to do because your mind is busy thinking about something else in some other place. And the reason is that when your nervous system believes that there's a demand on you, then it rings an internal alarm and your blood pressure goes up and your pulse goes up and you breathe more rapidly, you begin to perspire, your thoughts begin to race and you feel a sense of anxiety inside, etc. All of those are the symptoms of stress. And the cause of the stress is the belief by your nervous system that you need to deal with this demand immediately. Well, of course, there's nothing that I can do about my son. There's no way I can go and bail him out of jail while I'm speaking to you. There's no way I can get the car fixed or do anything about it right now. So what you know at the conscious level is this is not a demand you need to deal with at this moment in time. And what you'd like to be able to do is go click and turn off the tension, bring your blood pressure down, bring your awareness into the present and so forth. But we haven't learned to do that. But we can learn to do that, because our thoughts are behaviors. Our emotions are behaviors. Just because you can't see them, it doesn't mean that they're not there. And it doesn't mean that they're not, they are behaviors. And our beliefs are behaviors. So if I can't focus on what I'm doing here, for instance, there's a part of me that believes that it's appropriate for me to think about something somewhere else. And so at this point, we have an internal conflict. So we don't have wholeness because all of our subsystems are not working in harmony with each other. I'm walking down the street, I'm feeling fine, and I sniff, and I'm passing Mrs. Fields' cookies, and a smell of chocolate is wafting out. Now, I wasn't thinking about chocolate. In fact, I'm on a diet. That's the last thing I want is chocolate. But my stomach says, I want chocolate. And my mind says, no, no, no. Keep walking that way. We're trying to get back. No. And there's an internal stress, cognitive dissonance, if you will. And I might eat three or four cookies, which is something, oh, I can't believe it, I ate four cookies today. It's a behavior. That behavior does not go along with what I know is right for me at the higher levels of my consciousness. So our goal is to have all the systems working, but for them all to be under the guidance of the highest level of our awareness. What are the tools that we can use to enhance the healing response? Well, there's the first one, to really understand how powerfully the mind impacts the healing response. Even from something that's clearly not a psychological thing, like surgery. I found that if I gave a person some guided imagery, if I prepared a tape, this was back in the 70s, and I gave it to them before I did surgery on them, they had a lot less pain. They needed less anesthesia, so they didn't have as much pneumonia or other complications afterward. They really bled less while I did the surgery on them. They healed more rapidly, and they were out of the hospital 25% earlier. And that was one of the things that got me into, so how am I, a little guy practicing medicine here on the West Coast, going to affect this whole world of medicine? And that's when the audio cassette was invented, I said, aha, this is the key, guerrilla marketing. I'll make these tapes. Doctors and psychologists and yoga practitioners will give them to people, and people will start learning. And from the grassroots, there will be a demand to do something about it. So there was several people around this time who did amazing work. Ken Pelletier, Carl Simonton. Carl Simonton worked with Maggie Creighton. And Maggie Creighton and I got together, and we created the first cancer support and education center in 1977 in Menlo Park, where we trained I don't know how many people how to go out and work with people who have cancer. And for one, is to teach people how to say, I have cancer. Instead of being afraid to say the word, being afraid to even look at it. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Don't tell me what's on the blood test. Yeah. Instead, own what's there and then say, now let's see what we have available to do something about it. So to be able to use your mind, that's that your mind is this wonderful tool to come into reality. What do I mean by that? Okay, it's what we, little thing we used to say back in medical school. What's the difference between a normal person and a neurotic and a psychotic? Well, a normal person, you say, how much is 2 and 2? They say 4. You ask a psychotic, how much is 2 and 2? They say 17 or purple or Britney Spears or something like that. You ask a neurotic how much is 2 and 2, they say 4. But it really pisses me off. The ability to accept the truth of what is at this moment, to stop wishing that it were something else, to stop thinking that something else was supposed to happen. I see people with cancer. Somebody comes in with lung cancer. They're really furious. They say, I never smoked. And I have an uncle who smoked until he was 99. And here I am, 46, and I didn't smoke. And I had a really good diet. They're furious. It's a normal reaction, but it's a good idea to pass through it. Lots of times we beat up on ourselves. We feel guilty about what happened. You know, well, maybe I did smoke. Now I feel guilty because I smoked, and now I have emphysema because I smoked. Okay, how is that going to help? So feeling guilty, feeling ashamed, feeling resentment, feeling anger at, you name it, Okay, those are normal reactions. How long are we going to stay with them? The problem is that the longer that we stay thinking about how things should be or could have been or ought to be or how I wish they were, or what that takes your awareness from being right here and now. And if you wish to communicate with this wild pony of a mind that you have, then it's necessary for you to be here, because this is where your mind lives. To be here means coming into the present moment, a very powerful tool, presence, to be here and now. Where's Gary? Can you help me? To be here and now, to come into this moment. To be aware of the fact that at this moment in time, it's not possible for you to be any other place. Whatever happened yesterday, happened yesterday. It's not going to change. You can't be listening to anyone else speak at this moment other than me. Therefore, you must be at exactly the place that you're supposed to be. And you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. So let's take a moment and come into the present moment. So allowing your body to be sitting in a comfortable position so you don't have to do any work. Maybe take a couple of deep breaths in and out. Breathe out any unnecessary tension or stress that you might have. Feel the chair beneath you and feel the rising and falling of your chest and your abdomen with each breath as the air enters and leaves. Allow yourself to hear the sounds that are reaching your ears at this moment. Feel the coolness of the air as you breathe in through your nostrils and the warmth as you breathe out. Become aware of the fact that at this moment in time, there's no other place that you need to go. There's nothing else that you need to do. And there's no problem that you need to solve. And therefore, you can give yourself permission to relax. Being relaxed simply means being here and now. And a really good way to do that is to allow your eyelids to close, if you haven't already done so, and behind your closed eyelids, to let your eyes roll upward toward the back of your forehead. And imagine that there on the back of your forehead, you can see the word, relax. Relax. And as you do, let your eyelids relax all the way down to the point they just don't want to open at all. Then gently test your eyelids and feel how relaxed they've become. Simply by looking upward at the back of your forehead brings a certain reflex into play, and your eyelids just don't want to open at all. And as you test them, let the relaxation from your eyelids flow throughout all the rest of your body. Imagine little ripples of relaxation flowing outward from your eyelids, flowing outward into your forehead, through your scalp. Ripples of relaxation flowing outward from your eyelids, like ripples flowing outward from a stone thrown into the quiet surface of a still pond, reflecting the sky and clouds. And follow those ripples through all the muscles of your face. As the muscles around your mouth relax, you feel your jaw muscles relax. may notice your upper and lower teeth gently drift apart. And let that relaxation flow down into your neck and your shoulders. You may feel your shoulders sag an inch or two as you let go of tension you weren't even aware that you were holding. Each time you relax part of your body, you set free millions of neurons in your mind that can now join you here in this place now. And as you feel the relaxation flow down through your arms and your elbows, through your forearms and your wrists and your hands, all the way down into your fingers, and feel how that relaxation feels as it reaches the tips of your fingers. It might be a tingling or a warmth or a heaviness, a fullness or a pulsation. Notice how relaxation feels in your fingertips. And then, when you feel it, take a deep breath in. Breathe that relaxation from your fingertips up into your chest. And as you let this breath out, let go completely. And let the air do the breathing for you. The way it does at night, when you're not doing anything at all, deeply asleep, the air breathes you. And with each breath out, feel the letting go, the releasing. Letting go. That's the next really powerful tool for enhancing healing. Letting go of what you no longer need to carry with you. Feel your chest and your back relax with each breath, breathing tension out of your abdomen and your lower back. Let that relaxation flow down into your abdomen, through your pelvis and your thighs and your knees and your legs and your ankles, all the way down to the tips of your toes. Releasing and letting go. Good. And notice how much more relaxed you feel. Good. And now let's double that relaxation, because no matter how relaxed you become, it's always possible to relax even more. And remember that your relaxation is just letting go of tension that you don't need. All tension in the body is just a result of your body and your nervous system trying to hang on to something from the past, fighting a battle from yesterday or 5 minutes ago, or else it's trying to brace itself for tomorrow. But the past does not exist. Think about it. Not even 1 second of the past can ever come back again. The only thing that exists is this moment right here and right now. And the more fully you can bring your awareness into this moment, the more fully you can tap into the wisdom that is within you. The future does not exist either. The future is not a place you're going to. The future is a place that you are creating. And you are creating it now. And you have the choice of how you wish to create this future. And if you would like to create your future from the point of view of wisdom, wise guidance, love, wholeness, healing, if you would like to be the person that you came here to be, take a deep breath in, and as you let it out, let your relaxation double over what you have now. And again, as you let the air breathe you, feel the three parts of your breathing. The air breathes in all by itself, and then there's a letting go. Let yourself be part of that letting go. And then there's a little pause after you breathe out and before the next breath comes in. that pause is the quietest time of all for all your mind and body. Let yourself sink deeply into that pause. Feel that little spark of energy that starts the next breath in. No matter how relaxed you become down into this pause, there's something within you that wants to take that next breath in. That's the spark of life that is within you. Wait for it. Let it fill you with refreshing air. Imagine that you're breathing in pure white light, healing, love, joy, wholeness. And that with each breath out, you're letting go. Letting go of tension from your body. Imagine with each breath out, you breathe out unnecessary thoughts. Your mind belongs to you, and you have the right and the power to choose what thoughts you want to have in this mind. Anytime an unnecessary thought comes along, imagine that thought is like words written on a blackboard in your mind's eye. Then with your next breath out, imagine that as you gently test your eyelids, you erase that mental blackboard as if you're drawing a wet eraser across it. Or you might imagine that the unnecessary thought is like a little puff of smoke in the middle of your mind, and that with your next breath out, you breathe it out through your nostrils like two little exhaust pipes, sink deeply into the pause. And let the next breath in fill you with love. And by unnecessary thoughts, I mean doubts or questions or concerns or comparisons or judgments or criticisms or evaluations. You don't need to do any of that right now. You are here now, emptying with each breath out. Letting go. Good. And the next powerful tool you gain from looking within, from this quiet place. There's a great power within you, the power to heal. Which is actually the same as the power to be who you are. Imagine you're floating on a magic carpet, floating off to a very beautiful place, far, far away from anything that could ever disturb you. Maybe a place you've been on vacation in the past, or a place you'd like to go to, a mountaintop, a seashore. A beautiful garden. You can be dancing or swimming, lying in a hammock, or perhaps just listening to beautiful music. Allowing yourself to sink deeply into the space between the notes. That's where the real music is. Let yourself be at this beautiful place. Visualize it around you. See the colors and the shapes and the movements if you can. Hear the sounds around you. Smell the fragrances in the air and feel the textures of anything that you may touch. A place of serenity, your special place. And anytime any unnecessary thoughts come along, you simply breathe them out. And understand that you are exactly the person that you're supposed to be. And that by accepting yourself as you are able to tap into the deepest powers within you. With each breath out, think the words, I accept myself
exactly as I am. And now, with each breath out, think the words, I am not in this world to live up to anyone else's expectations. There is a place of wisdom and healing and love deep within me. And as you think these words to yourself in this place of relaxation, you recognize that they are true. Or, by continuing to speak them to yourself, discover that they become true. And perhaps you can reflect upon the past and recall times when you felt loved, when you felt yourself able to give love, perhaps to a child, perhaps to an animal or a plant, to yourself, to someone or something in which you believed deeply. Travel back to a time when you felt that kind of feeling. In any context, even if it was only for a minute or two, go back. Experience some of those times when you felt really deeply in touch with yourself, with the world around you. Might have been at the birth of your child. Might have been when you fell in love. Might have been a religious experience. You might have been swimming with dolphins or holding a kitten in your lap. Go back. Recreate that scene in your mind's eye as if you were going to tell me the story. And you're going to tell me in a way that I can really feel the love that you felt, the wholeness, the openness, the deep connection. And open yourself to feel that feeling. This is the next extremely powerful tool for enhancing the healing response. Your emotions. To set yourself free from harmful emotions and embrace those emotions that heal. Feel your capacity to give and receive love now. And notice where you feel it in your body and breathe into that place within you. And as you breathe into it, imagine that feeling grows even stronger. Let your body open to receive this feeling. Imagine that it spreads out from this place that you feel it the most, that it spreads out throughout all the cells of your body, that each breath breathes it all the way out into your arms and legs and fingers and toes, into your entire being. More powerfully you can allow yourself to feel these healing emotions, the easier it will be for you to give yourself permission to feel them on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, minute to minute. Perhaps each breath can be the breathing in of love. Each breath can strengthen that part of you deep within that has known how to heal since the beginning of life on this planet. And you let the outside world go and open your heart to those who can love you and that you can love. Open yourself to those experiences in life that will create the kind of healing that you truly want for yourself now, and that you truly know is possible. And give yourself permission. become more whole. The deeper levels of your mind are your servants. They're capable of great magic. They simply wait upon your words. And if you tell them you can't fight City Hall, life's a bitch, and then you die, whatever can go wrong will go wrong, they will believe you and make it true. This is the secret. Become aware of what you want for yourself. Imagine you can look forward into the future, and right now you're standing at a fork in the road. And down one of these forks is healing. Look down that road and see yourself next week, next month, next year, 10 years from now. What can you see? Create an image in your mind's eye of yourself, that from this moment on, you carry within you this powerful feeling of love that continues to nurture your immune system. It nurtures every healthy cell of your body. Picture your body in the future, looking and feeling as healthy and as well, as whole, as loving, as free, strong, joyful, honest, willing to see the truth and embrace it, having the courage to be yourself, to speak your truth, to do the things that you know it's right for you to do, and having the deep serenity to accept the truth of what is at this moment. Step into this image and become this person now. In your imagination, imagine you are being transformed into this person. And notice how it feels. Each time you picture yourself the way you really want to be, you become more and more this person, because this is the person you already are down deep inside. As you learn to let go of those things that you no longer need, as you set aside the burdens that may have held you back in the past, as you let go of unnecessary stress, you set yourself free to truly become this person that you already are. And if you wish this to be true, you may choose now to allow it to be true. And touch into your deepest spiritual beliefs, whatever they may be for you, if you're fortunate enough to have them. And just become aware that you can open and allow that support too. I'm going to ask you to slowly begin to return. But you can come back without coming back. Or should I say, who comes back is not the same person who closed their eyes a little while ago. You can try to make yourself the same person if you should want, or you can allow yourself to bring back the wisdom from within. The self-acceptance, the awarenesses that you've allowed yourself to have today, to come back feeling more and more like your true self, more committed to do what you know it's time for you to do. So as I count from 1 to 5, gently ride your magic carpet. 1, through time and space. And yet, still right here and now. Two, allowing your awareness to expand out so you can feel the surface beneath you and aware again of your breathing and the sounds reaching your ears. Three, the beautiful music. An awareness that there are others in the room around you. And still you can be very centered within yourself. Four, as if you've been on a long journey, a deep sleep, bring yourself all the way into this moment, feeling wide awake, feeling your body begin to stretch and move. Then take a deep breath in, and as you let it out, let your eyelids open and think wide awake. Five, and take a moment and notice how comfortable you're feeling. Good.